Nazis. Everyone at the funeral expected something of the kind. It was plain on their faces. All reports indicate that most of the country and much of the world feel the same way. The notion of Theodore Roosevelt being gone is that. Unacceptable. I dined with Laszlo Kreitzler at Delmonico's last night. Kreitzler. He didn't want to attend the funeral, though Edith Roosevelt would have liked him to. She has always been truly partial to the man she calls the Enigma, the brilliant doctor whose studies of the human mind have disturbed so many people so profoundly over the last 40 years. Kreitzler wrote Edith a note explaining that he did not much like the idea of a world without Theodore, and being as he's now 64 and has spent his life staring ugly realities full in the face, he thinks he'll just indulge himself and ignore the fact of his friend's passing. Some of the boys from the Times wanted me to come to a memorial dinner tonight, but a quiet evening at Delmonico's with Kreitzler seemed much more the appropriate thing. It wasn't out of nostalgia for any shared boyhood in New York that we raised our glasses, because Laszlo and Theodore didn't actually meet until Harvard. No, Kreitzler and I were fixing our hearts on the spring of 1896, nearly a quarter of a century ago, and on a series of events that still seems too bizarre to have occurred even in this city. By the end of our dessert and Madeira, the two of us were laughing and shaking our heads, amazed to this day that we were able to get through the ordeal with our skins. There's no simple way to describe it. I could say in retrospect it seems that all three of our lives, and those of many others, led inevitably and fatefully to that one experience. But then I'd be broaching the subject of psychological determinism and questioning man's free will, reopening, in other words, the philosophical conundrum that wove irrepressibly in and out of the nightmarish proceedings, like the only hummable tune in a difficult opera. Or I could say that during the course of those months, Roosevelt, Kreitzler, and I, assisted by some of the best people I've ever known, set out on the trail of a murderous monster and ended up face to face with a frightened child. But that would be deliberately vague. No, there's only one way to do it, and that's to tell the whole thing, going back to the first grisly night and that first butchered body. Yes, to dredge it all up and put it finally before the public. That's the way. It's been concern about public reaction that's forced us to keep the story secret for so many years. Theodore knew that the American people were not ready to hear the truth at the time. I wonder if they are now. Kreitzler doubts it. I told him I intended to write the story, and he gave me one of his sardonic chuckles and said that it would only frighten and repel people, nothing more. The country, he declared tonight, really hasn't changed much since 1896. We're all still running, according to Kreitzler. In our private moments, we Americans are running just as fast and fearfully as we were then, running away from the darkness we know to lie behind so many apparently tranquil household doors, away from the nightmares that continue to be injected into children's skulls by people whom nature tells them they should love and trust, running ever faster and in ever greater numbers towards those potions, powders, priests, and philosophies that promise to obliterate such fears and nightmares and ask in return only slavish devotion. Can Kreitzler truly be right? But I wax ambiguous. To the beginning, then. An ungodly pummeling on the door of my grandmother's house at 19 Washington Square North brought first the maid and then my grandmother herself to the doorways of their bedrooms at 2 o'clock on the morning of March 3rd, 1896. I lay in bed in that no longer drunk yet not quite sober state which is usually softened by sleep, knowing that whoever was at the door probably had business with me rather than my grandmother. I burrowed into my linen-cased pillows, hoping that he'd just give up and go away.
"Mrs. Moore, it's a fearful racket. Shall I answer it, then?"
"You shall not. Wake my grandson, Harriet. Doubtless he's forgotten the gambling debt." Then I heard footsteps heading toward my room and decided I'd better get ready. Since the demise of my engagement to Miss Julia Pratt of Washington some 2 years earlier, I'd been staying with my grandmother, and during that time the old girl had become steadily more skeptical about the ways in which I spent my off hours. I had repeatedly explained that as police reporter for the New York Times, I was required to visit